Good evening. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, I think it was. Yeah, I remember. I was there. 1981, and I'm grateful for that, and I want to continue this series we're on, and I do appreciate being here, and I appreciate y'all being here, showing up. I drove up from Miami with my lovely wife, my lovely bride, who's sitting in the back, hugging on the wall there, you know, paying close attention. She's the one who during this talk will be rolling her eyes. I mean, you guys will be interested, but she'll just be rolling her eyes saying, why don't they let me come up there so I can tell them the truth, you know? Because, you know, she's an Al-Anon, you know. She does an Al-Anon 10-step. When I'm wrong, she probably admits it, you know. Helps keep me in line, so. We were listening to it was supposed to be an AA tape, but I think it was an Al-Anon tape. I'm not sure it was something, some young lady was giving a talk at a WikiPaw convention or something. I just came back from a WikiPaw convention. It was good. So it's good to be here. We're sort of like on step four, thereabouts, somewhere around step four. I'll talk a little bit about that. Is there anybody here who hasn't done step four? Okay, that's great, you know. And that's great. So, okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about that stuff. And I just want you to know, I don't, as you guys probably realize, I've said this before, I don't prepare a whole lot for this stuff. I mean, I'd be scared to prepare, you know. Then I'd have to actually worry about what I'm going to say. But I do think about it. I do, you know, think about it and, you know, think about if there's anything I want to talk about and things like that. And I just want you to know that at 9 o'clock this morning, 8:30 this morning, I was sitting at my computer doing something else, and I just started thinking about this meeting. And just think about what I wanted to talk about. We had a great meeting last night on a particular subject. You know, the funny thing about these steps, I've been doing this for like, doing these steps for like 30 years, you know, and you know, when I used to them, you know, your story changed, you change, you know. I mean, I'm 62. I came in when I was 31. You know, all I knew about when I came in was drinking. You know, I didn't know much about sobriety. I didn't know much about sobriety for the first 10 or 15 years, you know. And so now I'm, you know, with 31 years, all I want to talk about is sobriety. All I want to talk about is, you know, I don't want to talk about book one, How Not to Drink. I want to talk about book two, Relationship with God, Rocket in the Fourth Dimension. I want to talk about that stuff. So that's what I talk about. You know, A is like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. And there are guys will come in here, they'll talk nothing about, and all they'll talk about is not drinking, and that's okay. Put the plug in the jug and, you know, just hang in there one flipping day at a time. That's not what I'm going to talk about. And so when I first came in, what I talked about, and there's nothing wrong with this, is like a how to do the steps. You know, I used to follow guys around. You know, they say if you want what we have, and are willing to go to any length to get, then you're ready to take certain steps. So I realized after many years that there is actually a step before the steps, and the steps before the steps is develop a person or group of people that you see something in them that you want. Like Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, he puts it perfectly. He says, I knew there was something more, something that I hadn't got, you know, and he was watching Bill Wilson. And I think, yeah, I've come to learn, you know, I first came in here, I thought I was unique. You know how you come in here? And I've one of the things I've learned, which is wonderful, a wonderful thing to learn, I know it's a surprise to most alcoholics when they learn it. It's a pleasant surprise. And when you really believe it, it can change your life. I know before I came in here, I thought I was totally unique. Nobody could ever understand what I've gone through. And I was totally alone and separate from anybody, and could never really explain to you what my situation is, because I'm so different. My problems are so unique. And because I thought my problems were so unique and I was so different, I felt like separated from everybody. Or maybe because I was separated from everybody and separated from God, because that's part of it, maybe that's why I thought my problems were so unique. Now, after being in here for a while and going to meetings and sharing and talking to people before a lot of groups, I now realize that it's actually the opposite. You know, if I've had a thought, chances are you've had the thought. You know, if I've had a problem, chances are you've had the problem. And the fact of the matter is we're all twins. You know what I mean? And there's no unique problems in here. And so the only thing you have to do to have a good AA talk is just talk the truth. You know, just be transparent, which is a tough thing for alcoholics when your whole life you've been hiding out or putting up a front or trying to figure out what you could say so they will like you, which is a tough deal. It's a hard, deal to do. So you know, I now know that, you know, you don't have to, like, prepare too much. All you have to do is be honest about what your experience is. And hopefully, and this is the tricky part, actually know what your experience is. Instead of telling yourself some sort of rationalize about how you were the hero or you were the dog, but try to see it clearly, you know. And so that's what I try to do, when I'm sharing this stuff. So when I first came in here, what I would do is I would talk about how I did step four, and I'm not going to say much about how to do it. You know, you can read the book, really. You can, you know, if I learned a long time ago, if an alcoholic wants to do something as mysterious as it is, because step four was mysterious. Listen, I had all sorts of degrees. You know, I went very, very far academically, you know, and I was considered intelligent as far as academics are concerned. I mean, you got guys that didn't even graduate grade school doing step four. You know, they got a chart, for God's sakes, in the book. And I've got to tell you something, notwithstanding the fact that I was going from a doctorate in algebraic topology, and I did all the partial differential equations and calculus of manifolds and all the physics and all that sort of stuff, the Schrodinger wave equation, I had no idea what they were talking about with step four. I was like, I said, what the hell are they talking about? I could not figure it out. Well, you see, because if we could do these, if the things they ask us to do, the exercises they want us to do, if the attitudes they want us to take, if the behavior they want us to model, if the life they want us to live came naturally to us, and if it was comfortable, we wouldn't be in Alcoholics Anonymous. We'd be out there doing it and being wonderful. And nobody would even have to tell us how to do it because it would be the most natural thing in the world to do it. You know, and that would be it. And the fact of the matter is, I think I likened it to one of the meetings I went to here, is I sort of likened it to being left-handed and right-handed. You know, I'm right-handed, and I'll always be right-handed. And everything feels comfortable to me with my right hand, you know, working with my right hand, you know, shaking hands, eating. Now, if you were to tell me, listen, I got the answer to all your problems. Never use your right hand. Always use your left hand. Well, at first, I'd crush you off as being some sort of a nut. That could have nothing to do with it. Because it doesn't feel comfortable using my left hand. I don't want to use my left hand. And, you know, I have that suffer. You know, that one of the axioms I told you about that I realized after many years is when an alcoholic sees, hears, or is told anything he doesn't like, he gets angry and he crosses it off the list. He doesn't see it. It confuses him. And so there's a lot of things you hear in here that you just, there's a lot of things people read in this book that's as plain as day that they see 20 years sober after they've been pounded or 15 years sober, or 5 years sober after the divorce, that's been in the book all the time, they've read it all the time, they just sort of skipped over it. 90% of the God's, I can tell you this, 90% of the God stuff for most people is skipped over. That's neither bad nor good, it just is. The jaywalking doesn't get slipped over, the drinking doesn't slip over, but 90% of the God stuff, all of a sudden you're 10 years sober, you're 15 years sober, you know what I mean? You don't have a drinking problem, you don't have a drug problem, you know, but you're hanging on one flipping day at a time by your fingernails. And you know there's something wrong, and you know it has nothing to do with drinking, and you can't talk to anybody about it because you got that feeling of uniqueness, and you don't know what the problem is. And by the time somebody talks about God, you get pissed off, and you know that's probably not the way sober people think like they have it in the book, because in this book it says right here, we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Which I think means more than just not drinking. What do you think? Think? It means more than just not drinking, right? Can we agree on that? Because they could have said we stopped drinking, right? They probably say that somewhere. But they say here, we have found much of heaven and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which you had not even dreamed. Now, if you're an alcoholic and you don't want to be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, you're not the kind of alcoholic I was, because I drank to get rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. I mean, I didn't drink just to feel okay. I drank, you know, beam me up, Scotty. Get me out of here, you know? I drank for the noble art of getting drunk, let me tell you something, you know? And so this rocket in the fourth dimension of existence. But then it goes on. It says, the great fact is just this and nothing less. You know, you just... How long do you have to be soaked? I can't even tell you. It might have been 25 years before I saw that. The great fact is this, but nothing less. Now, you just say the great fact is this, nothing less. You just read that. But you know what that means? Have you ever thought about what that means? It means the great fact, which is probably like a major deal, because it's not even a fact. It's a great fact. In other words, you got this whole book and it's full of facts. You're trying to figure out, you ever say, what's the answer? When am I going to... You go to A meetings to listen to the speaker so you can find the answer. What's the answer? What's the answer? Give me the answer. And in the entire book, there's only one great fact. Now, there's the tremendous fact later on. But you ready for this? This is going to kill you. The tremendous fact is the same thing as the great fact. How many years sober do you got to realize that just in the beginning, they give you the answer to your entire life's problem, and they even put a spotlight on it, and they say it's the great fact. And people go to meetings and they talk about romantic relationships, and they wonder why they're not getting sober, and they don't talk about the great fact. And guess this, it says not only the great fact is, this is the crazy thing, you could read one sentence, and the answer is in one sentence, and they're reading the whole book. And they think acceptance is the answer. You know why? Because they read something where it said acceptance is the answer to all their problems. They sort of like that. It feels good. You don't have to do much. You know what I mean? You just sit around. You know, you don't even have to work. You don't have to do shit. You don't have to go to the bathroom. You know, just, you know, you don't have to go for job interviews. You don't have to get married. You know, like, I'm broke. I don't have a job. You know, I'm facing 15. Yeah, but, you know, I accept it. I'm okay. You know? And so that's what they think A is all about. And it says, the great fact is just this and nothing less. That's even better. It says, it's nothing less. It's that leaves like no, not that an alcohol can't rationalize his way out of this, but you know, if you really want to use the English language and be honest about it, it means it's just this and nothing less. Which means, if you try to make it less, you're wrong. Because it's not less than this great fact. This is the great fact. It's nothing less. And it says that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. Now, you may say, well, that's not the way I feel. Well, of course it's not the way you feel. That's why it's revolutionary. You understand? It doesn't say the great fact is it's nothing less that we agree with the way you feel. It says your ideas are going to be revolutionized. And how it's going to be revolutionized? Because the central fact of our lives today, the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty. Listen to the words they chose. Not this ain't no, you know, what is it? Progress, not perfection. You know, don't worry about it shit. This is like the absolute certainty. This is not even certainty. It's not even we're certain. We're absolutely certain. Listen, you can write New York all you want about me. You understand what I'm saying? Don't blame me. I'm just tell them I'm just quoting from the book. Just tell them to burn the book. You know what I mean? Take the words out of the book. The absolute certainty is that our creator, with a capital C, which I don't... Our creator. You know, unless you were created by a doorknob. I know they say it could be a doorknob, you know? I know they say your creator could be the group. They say it could be the group, right? I'm not putting it down if your creator is the group now, okay? But, you know, when you think about it a little bit more, you probably weren't created by this group. Although, now that I look at you guys, it's quite possible some of you were created by this group, which would account for some of the problems. Our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. If you read those promises, you know how people love to read the promises? You know, they love to read the promises. But you know, at the end of the promise, it says, he, you know, it says the same thing. It says, he, whoever he is, he, you know, you might want to find out who he is, because it says God could and would if he were sought, so you might want to seek him. He is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. This is the great deal, and that's the only thing I want to talk about. I want to talk about it. You know, I don't want to major on the minors. You know, I don't want to worry about your relationship with your dog or your husband or, you know, everything. Because I know this. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness, and everything will be added to you. If you know you've got God on your side, you've got that relationship right. According to this, everything else works out. If that's not right, nothing works out. Nothing works out. That's what this book says. That's what this book is all about. That's why they have the chapter to the agnostics. And that's why they say if a mere code of morals or better philosophy of life would work out, we would have been well a long time ago. That doesn't work because we're powerless over that. Because no matter how good the morals are and everything like, we somehow screw it up. We're in the equation. We got to find the power that will allow us to live life in a decent way, and that means we got to talk about God. And it says we're going to get all upset about that. So if you get upset, you're following along with the book. But it says, you know what it says about this? It says this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. Get over it. And so, so one of the things I've got to I see in this book, and we're sort of like on four, but I'm sort of like ease up to four and go into a little bit three and ease into three. Is it says this? It goes on to say, and I'm just hitting the major high points of this thing. We talked about what really the solution is. The book tells you what the solution is. It says let no man say he needs a wife back, his family back. You know, he can get sober no matter what. You know, it's all about his relationship with God, job or no job, wife or no wife, all that sort of stuff. Burn the idea into, you know, the person's mind that he can do anything as long as he trusts God and clean house. I mean, it's all over the book in any event. But then it goes on to say this. It says, here's what the real problem is. Here's what your problem is. It's your problem is you're selfish and self-centered. That's what your problem. You see, if you're here, I know you're selfish and self-centered. Now, you want to know something? You don't have to be an alcoholic to be selfish and self-centered. There's other people out there that are selfish and self-centered. Probably a lot of people that are selfish and self-centered. But the problem is, when we're selfish and self-centered, we die. See, they just live lives of quiet desperation, and they're sort of miserable, and you know, they don't feel good about themselves, and they go through a whole lot of problems and different problems and things like that, okay? But we drink or we die. Or we just live disastrous lives. I mean, for us, it's like a real problem. I know it's a real problem because I know a little bit about my life. I've sponsored a lot of people, and I know what it says here. It says selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. Now, you know, isn't that great? Because not only does it tell me about me, it tells me all about you. See, I know all about you. You see, I know that if you're an alcoholic and you're here, that you're selfish, you're self-centered, you know, and you're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. See, I know that about you. And if you think I'm wrong, that only means you're in denial. That's what it means. You know, that's the deal. That's what it means. Trust me. I mean, this is the greatest book in the world. You guys, once you know about it, listen. You know, once you understand this stuff and you start getting into the idea of discernment and discerning what's going on in you, you know, if you... I'll put it to you this way. Let me try to say it this way. I said jokingly, but it was true, that alcoholics are given a little gift. We have like a gift. I think we have a gift different than anybody else. Alcoholics can recognize assholes a mile away. And you know, I one of the examples I say is I'd be sitting in a bar, and on the other side of the bar, some guy will walk in that I've never even seen before, never even had a conversation before, and he walks in the bar and he's like 50 yards away with a good-looking blonde. And immediately, I know he's an asshole. I'll turn to my friend, the other drinking buddy. I'll say, look at that asshole. And you know what he'll say? He sure is. He'll agree with me. You know how comfortable it is to be able to tell somebody's an asshole right off the bat? But of course, no, I didn't realize this. And I'm going to tell you something. We sort of laugh at that, but I'm actually telling you how I think. I'm actually telling you how I think. You know, we laugh at that because it's funny. Because a lot of our stuff is sort of funny now. But the truth is, if you want to know the truth is, that's how I perceive the world. I don't perceive the world the way the world is. I perceive the world the way I am. And so if I'm greedy, or if I'm envious, or if I want what you have, or if I feel like a piece of crap, and I see you walk in with a car or something like that, my perception of you is you're an asshole. It makes me mad. Now, do you think I would ever any clue of even thinking? Do you think drinking in a bar or sitting around on my own devices, no matter how brilliant I am, because all my brilliance does is rationalize me into thinking that my way of thinking is right because my alcoholic life seems the only normal one. It's not only drinking. You know, I drink greed. I drink envy. I drink lust. I drink all that stuff. You know what I mean? And it's my way of thinking, as crazy as it sounds, as laughable it is, seems absolutely normal and comfortable to me. It's natural. I don't even have to work a step on it. I don't have to make a list or anything. It's like bam. It's like right there in front of me. That guy's an asshole. Look at that jerk. That's the way I see the world. The way people drive, that guy. I'm just pointing out assholes all over the place, and I think I'm right. And I can prove it mathematically. You know what I mean? That's the way I think. Sober. Physically sober, I think that way. Take away the booze. I probably think it that way more sober. That's alcoholism. That's the selfishness and the self-centeredness. That's the greed. That's the problem. That's the real problem. You know? And so it says selfishness, self-centeredness. That's that. And then it says, we're an extreme example of self-willed one riot, though we usually don't think so. You know, which, what does that tell me right off the bat? It says I'm blind. You know, I mean, I'm spiritually blind. You know, you go through the world spiritually blind, and when you're blind to the world, you trip over the furniture of the world. There's all this furniture out there. There's potholes and everything. You just trip over this stuff. And the best you can do when you trip over the furniture is think you're a victim and blame other people. You know, it's a crummy way to live life, you know, unless you start seeing the world clearly. Now, one of the interesting things is alcoholics with this book and working a spiritual program and focusing on God, alcoholics are given the gift of discernment. Because what I found in my life, the amazing thing is that the more I understand what I'm about and why I do the things I do, it's scary. I got to tell you something. The more I see myself, why I say the things I say and why I do the things I do and why I make the choices I make, the more I see that deal and why I do it and how I do it, the more I can read right through you. I can't explain it. You see, if I know me, then I know you. As a matter of fact, it gets even crazier, and this is what happens when you're a sponsor. I know you better than you know you. As a matter of fact, I can meet you one time and shake your hand and have never spoken to you before, and you start talking, I know more about you than you know about yourself. You may find that hard to believe, but it's true. Because you're an alcoholic. I know what you're thinking. I know what's really going on. And you know something? If I tell you about you, you know what you'll say? You'll deny it. You'll say, you don't know me. And you know something? 5 years from now, you'll be admitting to the things I'm telling you about yourself. You'll have seen it. Let me tell you something. The truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. You know that old saying? The truth, you can't handle the truth. It says, above everything, we must get rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes us possible. And then it starts talking about turning your life and your will over to God and making that third step decision. You know what I'm talking about? And then it says this, right after that, and then we'll launch in this. It says, when we sincerely took such a position, we made this decision that we're going to turn our will and our lives over to God. Because, you see, here's the crazy thing. If you turn your will and your life over to God, if you buy into this crap, you know what I mean? And you turn your will and your life over to God, then if you turn your will, which is basically, your will would be everything you want to do. You understand what I'm saying? You know, like I'll have guys come up to me and say, well, I don't want to do that. I said, well, what does that have to do with it? Did you do the third step? He says, yeah. He says, well, I don't want to do it. Well, what is it? What is your will, what you want to do, have anything to do with anything? Once you turn your will over, what does it matter? The statement, I don't want to do it, is a non sequitur. It means nothing. You understand what I'm saying? Because once you turn your, if you say, I'm not going to do it because I don't want to do it, you haven't turned your will and your life over to God. You're telling me what you want to do. You're not giving up your will. That's why the third step is that. Because, you know, because you tell me I don't want to do the fourth step. I know you don't want to do the fourth step. But don't worry about it because you have nothing to do with this. I'm not asking your permission. You know what I mean? You've turned your will. This is what God wants you to do. This is what the book wants you to do. This is what you're going to do what I want you to do. You know what I mean? So now listen, if you turn your will, that's everything you want to do, right? Now that's over to God, right? Who is, by the way, all powerful. I know he is because the book says he is, you know? Don't believe me. It's the book. It says he's all powerful, you know? And the book says you're going to, what you need to do is you need to stay close to him and do his work well, perform his work well. That's the only thing you're supposed to do. You know, I know you think you're supposed to get a car and, you know, get a husband or get a wife or something. No, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to perform, you stay close to him and do his work well. That's your only job on the planet. And then you can be of maximum service to him and other people. That's it. That's your job. That's it. All the other stuff you're either get or not get, it's not important, okay? So that's you turn your will over to God. And if that wasn't bad, there may be a few, like, molecules left. We'll call that your life. You give that to him, too. You know what I mean? You guys ever read this shit? Do you think, I'm going to ask you something. Do you think when alcoholics read this stuff, they actually know what they're reading? No. No, the answer is no. They don't know what they're reading. They read this. The amazing thing is that you can get as much as how much we can get out of this, and how long we can stay sober, not even knowing what we're, not even appreciating how deep this stuff is and what we're reading. In other words, you could read this stuff cursory, just sort of like an overview of it, and think you got it, and sort of mouth the words, and you still get a lot out of it. Imagine if you actually took it to heart and believed this crap, and actually did it. Imagine how incredible that would be. But when you start actually thinking about the words, just sentence by sentence, they're like amazing. It's like, what, did I join a monastery? Yes. What, am I supposed to be a priest or a nun? Yeah, pretty much. It's a pretty serious, devastating disease. You know, it's an intense disease. It's about doing this intensely. You're not supposed to be a dilettante. You know, sort of like, I think I'll dabble in this and dabble in that and everything. And that's why a lot of people don't make it, because they don't take it seriously. It's like a band-aid. Well, I'll do this. I'll do like AA, you know. I mean, I got a job. I got things like, and I'll do this. No. This is the real deal. This is like, you know, you don't have to be a member. You don't have to become a nun. You don't have to be a priest. But it's a high priest. That's the position you're in. And they got you out there evangelizing, talking to other people about this stuff. Now, you don't have to believe me. You know, we'll talk about this again if I'm still alive in about 10 years. You'll see how you feel about it. Experience is a wonderful teacher in this deal as to who makes it and who doesn't make it. It says when one sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. How many people want remarkable things to happen? Three people. That's why this thing doesn't... We had a new employer being all-powerful, I told you. It's not a higher power. Forget that higher power. It's the highest power. I mean, you really want to link up with, like, the assistant deputy chief power, you know? What kind of loser are you, you know? The highest power. He's the highest power. The higher power is like the group and the doorknob. You know, I mean, when you first come in here, you know, maybe the group and the doorknob and the tree is good enough. But, you know, if you really want to get the real meat and potatoes of this, you want to go to the highest power. Whoever created the doorknob and the tree, you know what I mean? You want to go to that guy. You really do. Because the doorknob really can't handle the IRS, but he can. He provided what we needed. He provided what we needed. Did you hear that? Do you know what that means? It means he will provide what you need. You know? You don't even know what you need. But let me tell you something, whatever you need, he's going to provide it. You know what Dr. Bob said in the last statement? And look it up. It says, your heavenly Father will never let you down. He said, if you're an atheist, an agnostic, or of any other sort of intellectual pride that keeps you from taking this book, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. See, I don't know crap. All I'm doing is quoting from the book Alcoholics Anonymous and our founders. That's all I'm doing. So if you got a problem, your problem is not with me. The only problem with me is I've actually read the material. Your problem is there's some guy reading, you think you're doing AA. You thought you were doing AA. You like the AA you're doing because it's comfortable to you because you don't have to break a sweat. You know what I mean? You can still go out there and screw around and all that sort of stuff, and you don't like my concept of AA, but all I'm doing is just repeating what's in the book. I may be putting a highlight on it or something like that. You may have to now think about it. You know, or worry about it or something, but all I'm doing is reporting, you know, this is a step series, right? All I'm doing is reporting what the steps are all about and what this program is all about. You don't have to get mad about it. Just tell yourself the truth. Be honest. Say, I'm not going to do it. That way, when you drink and you're drugged or you're miserable, at least you won't be putting down AA and saying it doesn't work. You'll just say, I didn't do it. I was told what it was work. I was at a meeting. They told me what to do. I didn't want to do it because I didn't have that we. I didn't have those people in my life that I wanted what they had, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. I never found that person. Or you'll say, I found that guy, I saw that person, I wanted what he had, I didn't even know what he had, but I was willing to go to any length to get it, and I listened to him, and this is the deal. And so I started doing this stuff, and I got it. It'll be one of those two things. It's very simple. It's not, you know, rocket science. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in. We enjoyed peace of mind. As we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. How about that? How would you like to lose fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter? We were reborn. Then it says the third step prayer, and at the after third step prayer, it says right after the third step prayer, and everybody knows the third step prayer, but how many people know the sentence right after the third step prayer? The sentence right after the third step prayer. Not too many people know the sentence right after the third. Here's another one of those deals where people don't, you know, listen to what they say. They say, we thought well. We thought well. Now, I know you guys know what this is. You probably got it memorized. Because how many people have done the third step prayer? Wow, you've done the third step. Well, then you've all read this. And you all know what they said. It says, we thought well before taking this step. Wow, you even think about this before taking the step. We thought well before taking the step, making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Now, I don't have my dictionary here, but I have a feeling utterly means something like the clown who's telling you God isn't important is full of shit. I think utterly means like that's not even abandon yourself to them. That's like utterly, that's like certain, that's like absolute certainty. Utterly abandon yourself to him. That's like there's no argument about it. No room, no wiggle room there. Do you think that's something people read or understand? You know, maybe at year 25 or 30 or something. Or you think that's probably a skip over. I think that's a skip over. I know it's a skip over because I skipped it over. I know you skipped it over too. Or if you saw it, you read it and just threw it away. Some of the most important things that are in this book, I guess they're like old-timer stuff, you know, that'll really change your life are the stuff we sort of skip over. Whenever an alcoholic hears, sees, or is told anything he doesn't like, it confuses him. But you know, some of the stuff you skip over, the stuff you don't pay attention to, the stuff that you don't do, the important stuff like this, that's the reason why at 5 or 10 years or 15 years sober, you still feel crappy about yourself. When you think you've done the steps, when you think you're doing AA, and you haven't done it at all because you skipped over all this stuff, and you didn't take it seriously. You didn't understand how serious these guys were. And, you know, that's the problem. You know, I sponsor guys that have 20 years and 25 years. You know, they've done all the steps, they speak at meetings, they do all that sort of stuff, and they got a problem. You know what the problem is? This. The problem is they thought they were taking AA seriously, and they weren't. And they weren't. They weren't serious about it. Now, I'm not saying that's bad or good or whatever. It is what it is. You know, I don't expect a 3-year-old to act like a 20-year-old. I don't think, I've got little granddaughters and grandsons, you know, and they're 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. I expect them to act like 3, 4, 5, 6 year olds. You know, and they act and they have fun and they bump their head and they get into trouble and all that sort of stuff, but they're 3 years old and 5 years old. That's the way they're supposed to be. Supposed to be arrogant and prideful and all that sort of stuff and run around and think they know it all and everything, and teenagers are supposed to act that way. But you know, when you get a little up there in years and you still don't know this stuff, and you're making excuses just so you don't have to change, you know, that's where you get into real trouble with this deal. So it says the world and its people really dominate us. You know, they have the power to kill, you know, one of the things that I was talking about as far as seeing things clearly, that's the benefit, I think. One of the benefits, you know, when I think about the fourth step, and I did it I'm not going to do the how to do it, but I'll tell you this. There's 4 lists in the book, and the book tells you exactly how to write out the 4 lists. They have a chart, and they even tell you how to look at it and how to deal with it. There's a list of resentment, it's a list of fears, a list of faults, a list having to do with our sexual situation. There's 4 lists. And, you know, God shows up to me, wants to do a 5th step. I say, where's your list? I left it home. We ain't going to do it. You're going to get your list. And it tells you how to look at these lists and everything like that. And so that's how I did it. You want to use Hazelton. You want to use something on the computer. You want to use whatever you want to use. That's fine. I don't care. I'm not going to put any of that down. I'm just telling you, and this is just my opinion. This is not gospel. It's just my opinion. We have a book. This is our basic text. It's been good for years. Millions of people have done well with it. You know, my gut feeling is if you're going to do it, why don't you try it the way the book says it first before you try it the fancy way. I'm not saying you did it wrong if you didn't use it with a book. You know, but I'm saying, but this is the way the book did. This, of course, I'm going to say what worked for me. If this is what worked for me, you know, and it's worked so far, yeah, I'm saying, why don't you try it? You know, and by the way, when we get to the 10th step, it's not even in the 10th step. We'll get to this in the 10th step, but you've already done, it says continue to take personal inventory. So the 10th step isn't even about how to do the inventory, because they're talking about the same inventory in a sense that you did, and the manner and method in which you did it, it's just we continue to do it. So I'm saying, if you want to know how to do it, take this thing home, read it, look at the chart, talk to your sponsor. That's how you do it. Now, why is it important? Well, to me, I'm going to think about, well, ultimately, and this is my own theology, and I think it's backed up by the book. I want to talk about why I think it's important, and then what I really want to talk about, which I really think is exciting, is the results of coming to grips with yourself. You know, there were three books that the founders in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers said were actually absolutely essential. And I've spoken about this before. This is just factual. The Big Book was written in 1939. AA started in 1935. They say, rarely have I seen a person fail. It was thoroughly followed our path. They had a path. The path was not reading the Big Book. It wasn't based upon the Big Book. The path, because the Big Book wasn't in existence. When they wrote the sentence, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, that was a sentence written in a book that wasn't published yet, called the Big Book. Their path did not include reading the Big Book. Their path included reading the Bible and things from the Bible. That was it. I'm not asking you to like it. Doesn't matter whether you like it or not. It's just true, okay? And one of the things they say in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers is, and I won't read it to you, but I'll show it to you if you want to see it. It says the books we found at, we were convinced that our answer was in the Good Book, the Bible, and the three books that we found absolutely essential. There you go again. That we found absolutely essential was Sermon on the Mount. And a lot of people get that from, what's that book? Emmett Fox, Sermon on That. That's Matthew 5, 6, and 7, which is the only sermon Jesus gave in the Bible. It's a sermon on how do you live your life a certain way. And guess what? I know this is going to shock you. All the steps are in the sermon. They're all there. The whole 12-step program is in the sermon. Blow your mind? Well, it shouldn't blow your mind. He just stole the whole thing from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, because when you're a prophet, you can see this shit. You know what I mean? You know, and even if you don't believe it was God, he was probably very spiritual. He probably read the book before it was even published, you know? And so he put it down there, you know? And then there's this 1 Corinthians 13, which a lot of people call the love thing. And then there's the book of James. We're almost called the James Club. But in 1 Corinthians 13, it says we see through a glass darkly. He says as time goes on, he says things are going to get clearer. He says, but in one of these days, we're going to see the whole thing. We're going to see the whole thing. You don't want to be way off the mark on that. He says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. When I became a man, I put childish things away. That's what really, it's all about the force. It's all about growing up. It's all about putting away childish toys. It's all about getting, it's all, no, hey, no more make-believe. No more make-believe life. No more phonying up. No more making believe that you're better or worse than you are or whatever. It's just dealing with reality. Just growing, that's what grown-ups do. Grown-ups live in reality. Kids live in never-never land. Time to grow up. You know, time to realize that if you spend more than you make, you actually do go into something called debt. You know what I mean? Time to realize that when you use your credit card to buy something that you can't afford, okay, you're stealing. You're living a dishonest life. You know, time to realize what's really going on in your life and to grow up. It's time to do that. Well, you know, what do you think? Alcoholics don't even want to stop drinking. How do you think they feel when they get into, how do you think they feel when they're talking to me? And I'm talking about this other stuff. I mean, drinking was bad enough, but now you want me to give up, like, you know, raping, robbing, stealing, and all that other stuff, and lusting, and all that crap, you know what I mean? You know, you want me to become holier than thou? Yeah, I pretty much want you to become holier than thou. I know you're not going to make it, but at least put a stab on it. Why don't you read the six, six, sixth step and the seventh step. You know, why don't you read about the difference between the men and the boys? Why don't you read what it says the test is, what a well-loved clergyman says, that any man who repeatedly, over the period of his life, tries to grow in the image and likeness of his Creator and get away from his personality and go to his Creator's personality, you know what I mean, is a man to be called a man instead of a boy. Why don't you read what this program is asking you to do? You know what I mean? I don't want to shock you. It's all in the material that we skip over and we don't really read and don't really pay attention to. It's all in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, if you're getting pissed off, well, hey, if you're pissed off, if it doesn't bother you, you know what the spiritual axiom says? Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the problem, there's something wrong with you. So you can check on that too. But one of the great things is, why? Well, I happen to believe, and this is just based upon my reading of the book, because the book basically says it in no uncertain terms. The reason is because the most important thing is for me to commit myself to God, turn my will over to God, and have a relationship with God. Everything depends upon my relationship with God. Anybody have somebody they thought was a friend who turned out to be a liar? Stabbed them in the back, you know, betrayed them? What'd you do? Well, of course, if you're codependent, you continue to have him as your friend, and maybe you married him. You know what I mean? You know, a friend that abuses your trust, somebody that you can't trust, that talks about you behind your back, that lies, that, you know, really is just a horrible person, and you hang around them and everything like that. But ultimately, when you get a little bit weller, let's make believe that, you know, I know this isn't Well People's Anonymous, but let's make believe that we have some semblance of sobriety here. Has anybody in here gotten to the point where they stopped associating with people because, you know, Bill Wilson says emotional sobriety has to do with what we have is we have unhealthy dependencies and we have unhealthy relationships. I know it's hard for you to believe, but it actually happens. Alcoholics tend to link up with crazy people. But, of course, I guess the people we link up with, they're linked up to a crazy person too, so it makes sense. But, you know, I have alcoholics say to me, why'd you link up with that gal? She's an alcoholic. He says, well, we have something in common. Let's build a relationship. We're both alcoholics. We're both crazy. You know, you wouldn't buy car insurance that way. Well, I'm a bad driver and she's a bad driver. Our rates should be lower, you know? I don't know. So what do you do when you get weller and you don't hang? Anybody stop hanging? Anybody come in here and stopped hanging around certain people? You say, hey, you did that, you know, because these people are bad for you and everything like that. Well, you know something? You don't want to have a relationship with liars. You don't want to have a relationship with cheaters. You don't want to have a relationship with unhealthy people. Well, God doesn't really want to have a relationship with you either, if that's your deal. I mean, he loves you. He loves sinners. He loves people that are crazy, or else we wouldn't have this book. We'd have that, you know something? But, you know, he loves you because you're trying to get better. He doesn't want to have a relationship with you, you know, if you turn your back on him and doing whatever the hell you want to do. So I think what the book basically says, and it goes on to say it says, we have been, as a matter of fact, right after the fourth step, when we go into the fifth step and into action, it says this. It says what this whole thing is about. It confirms it. It says, have we made our personal inventory? What shall we do about it? And this is what it says. We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. That's what these steps are all about. Every step is to drive you closer to God and improve on the relationship. Nothing else. Nothing else. It's not even to keep you sober physically, because here's the deal. The person who only cares about physical sobriety will lose his sobriety. Unless he gets on the page and understands this is all about God. You know what it says in the book? It says it'll come a point in every alcoholic's life where his only defense against the drink will be, this is scriptural, will be his relationship with God. And it doesn't say that's going to be only after 1 month. It could be at 10 years. It could be at 15 years when you find out when your husband dies of cancer or something happens. It could be anywhere along the line, your only relationship with God. How would you like to be out there with a whole lot of mind crap about AA, thinking you know the program, thinking you know everything, sponsoring all sorts of people, having no relationship with God, and all of a sudden be hit, you know, not by one thing, but two things, but five things at the same time, next thing you know, you drink, and you can't even explain why. You think people drink it 15 years and 10 years and 7 years? You think people are out there that are 15, 17, 20 years sober, that are thumb-sucking crybabies and living lives of quiet desperation? Think there are people out there that are sober many years that are pissed off? You think people? Absolutely. They're all over the place. You can hear them at meetings. Sometimes they'll talk up. They say, I want to hear that shit. Just put the plug in the jug. They don't sponsor anybody because nobody wants what they have. You know, they're just the old guys sitting in a corner somewhere. That's what the whole thing is about. It's about God. So I think, you know, initially, why do you do it? You do it because our whole thing is about improving the relationship with God. I know, because it ultimately pours us out where? On the 11th step. We're all ultimately where we poured out on in the 11th step, which is about what? Having had a spiritual, we now improve our relationship with God. I mean, I can read. Can you read? I can read this stuff. You know what I mean? And then we carry that message to other people. I know I'm talking about stuff that isn't normally talked about in AA meetings. Well, the fellowship. Let's not even go into that, you know. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. By the way, it's made up of alcoholics, which pretty much explains the whole deal. You know what I mean? Don't expect to get any guidance there. You know what I mean? They're going to tell you how you don't have to do this shit, you know. And they've got it all figured out. How we don't have to do this thing, you know. Don't say the Lord's Prayer. Don't mention God. Just say higher power. They got it all figured out how to pasteurize, homogenize this thing, clean it up, make it politically correct so it has no power whatsoever. You know what I mean? And you can just stay physically sober and dry as a rock. They got to figure it out, because God forbid somebody should walk out the door because he hears somebody doesn't like. As a matter of fact, let's just make this one giant bar and we'll all drink coffee. Talk about ex-husbands and ex-wives, you know, stuff like that. Forget that rocketed shit, you know what I mean? Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize to AA as a whole and to you. Okay? But let me tell you, here's the benefit. We got 5 minutes. I'm going to tell you, here's the benefit of having a relationship with God and becoming transparent. And I'm not even saying I'm even close to that or anything like that. I'm a little bit better than I was 30 years ago. Okay? Just a little bit. You know, it allows you, you know, because you see things, you get to see things clearly. And seeing things clearly is magnificent. You know, like here, before I came to AA, maybe a week before I came to AA, I couldn't envision a life without drinking. Anybody ever at a place where they couldn't envision a life without drinking? They knew they had a drinking problem. Somebody said, you got to stop drinking, but you can't envision. You remember that? Now listen, let me guess. You were absolutely sure. You were absolutely sure you couldn't stop drinking, right? You would have bet your life on it, right? You get mad at anybody tell you don't understand. You'd say things like, you don't understand. You don't understand. I got a drink, right? And then you're thinking inside the box. Now, inside the box is everything you know. Everything you know, every book you read, everything you know is inside the box. Now, outside the box, you know what's outside the box? Everything you don't know. Now, listen to me. Here's the cool stuff. You don't know what you don't know. I want you to listen. You need to follow me here. You need to follow me here. Just follow me. Follow me. This is going to make sense. And it gets better than that, because you ready for this? What's outside the box is more than what's inside the box. You get it? Yeah, okay, good. So what happens is somebody shoves the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous inside your box, and the box gets a little bit bigger, right? Right? And all of a sudden you go from, I can't stop drinking, to I can't ever see having another drink again. Drinking is going to kill me. And you're absolutely sure about that. You see, that's just like shoving the big book in there. It's just a little bit bigger. You know what I mean? Just a tad bigger. You know, guys will come to my law office and they'll tell me a story. And they'll say, let me tell you a story. I need some help. And they tell me this story and they got a story, you know, and it's all bullshit, but I listen to it anyway because they pay me. Because they got a story and they're satisfied with the story, and it's all about how it's not their fault, they're innocent, they did nothing wrong, they're not to blame, they were in Milwaukee when it happened, some other dude did it, it doesn't matter, they got a story, okay? And they like the story. I said, did you tell the story to the cops? He says, yeah, what'd they do? They arrested me. He said, you see, the cops don't believe your story either, you know? But, you know, yeah, you see, story's probably not going to work because the judge is smarter than the cops. He thinks the way I think, and I don't like your story either, you know what I mean? But they're invested in the story. They like the story, so we have a story, you know? But you see, they tell me a story. And then based upon their story, he says, well, if that's the case, this is the answer. And then they say to me this. Oh, there's something I forgot to tell you. What? The cat had measles. I said, the cat had measles. Well, that changes everything. Now you can't do it this way. You got to do it that way. And you say, okay, I get it. Because this is the reason why. Because you changed the facts. So then they say, oh, there's something else I forgot to tell you. He says, what? The penguin died. The penguin died? Well, that changes everything. So if you change the story, if you change the facts, if the box gets bigger, everything changes. You understand what I mean? So you're shoving a book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything changes. So you're shoving a step meeting, or you're shoving a sponsor, and the box gets bigger, and as the box changes and gets bigger, your whole concept of everything changes. And God like invented the box. You want to get to his box, it's going to take a long time. He's like got the whole box, you know what I mean? And outside the box and everything, you know what I mean? But as your box gets bigger from the things you see and the things you learn and the things you accept, listen, drinking is the smallest part of this deal. Now, it's a big deal because if you don't get it, drinking is the smallest part of it. Imagine somebody just shoves in a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and you don't know crap more. And you're dumb as a skunk, and you don't even understand what this thing is about or what's in the big book, and the biggest problem that you think in your entire life goes away like that. Imagine what happens after 30 years if you really get into this shit. Imagine the power that is unleashed in your life and how you see yourself after 31 years if you take this stuff seriously. Man, are you kidding me? The stuff that, you know, can come inside your box, you know, when you start thinking outside the box and the box get bigger, it's amazing. I can't even do it. I can't even take my mind, you know what I mean? And let you know what's going to happen to you. It's incredible, but they're right. You're rocketing in the fourth dimension. You see things. I'm going to end up with have a couple minutes. I just want to tell you a story, which, you know, this is a story. I don't even usually tell this on the fourth step, but it really is sort of like a four-step story, kind of, sort of. I was going through after you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and you start, I know when we come in here because most people come in here because they can't stop drinking for some reason. Alcoholics Anonymous, the name gives it away. This is probably the place to go, you know. I mean, I would assume that most of you guys, if there's alcoholics in here, I would assume that most of you guys came in here because you had a drinking problem. Would that be correct? You're not sure? You don't want to commit. Okay. I understand that. This is why I love alcoholics, because you guys are crazy. Very, very ill. Very ill. But just like me, you know, we're all the same. But in any event, so most people come to Alcoholics Anonymous because they can't stop drinking. But and so that's why they come here. But I know you're not surprised to learn, since alcohol is but a symptom of our disease, and then when drinkers are like the effect produced by alcohol, and our real disease centers our mind, not our body. In other words, we're crazy, and that's why we drink, so that we don't feel crazy. You know, we drink for a million reasons, but we drink because we can't. I know you'll understand that after people come into Alcoholics Anonymous, they find from time to time that they're suffering from other stuff. You know, perhaps even one or two people in here have found that to be true, that they're going through crap again and again and again. Maybe it's relationship crap. Maybe it's loneliness crap. Maybe it's boredom crap. Maybe it's just an unmanageable life crap having nothing to do with alcohol, just basically having to do with the world and your mind. You know what I mean? Well, you know, wouldn't it be great if whatever you're going through right now, I could sort of snap my fingers and have it go away and change you so not only it goes away, that your life becomes fantastic. Would that be a cool deal? You know, there are people that make a lot of money, you know, doing this kind of stuff. You know, but I could, you know, but, you know, let me tell you something. I went into, I had a problem bothering me when I was about 9 years sober. And it had been bothering me for about 6 months. And what the problem, now I didn't realize this was the problem because I only had 9 years and I'd only read the book 15 million times and whatever it is. And the problem, I'm telling you what the problem was, I was scared. And now, I didn't know I was scared because I'm an alcoholic, so I can tell myself things like, I'm not scared. You know what I mean? You can, and I, since I believe I'm brilliant and I believe me before I believe you, I can start believing that I'm not scared, even though I act like it. You see, I'll have conversations with alcoholics, and they'll say, I'm worried about losing my job. I think the boss is going to fire me. I don't know what's going to happen. How am I going to pay the rent? And I said, oh, so you're scared. And he says, no, I'm not scared. I'm just... I'm not making... Listen... I'm not making this stuff up. You're laughing. I'm not making this shit up. I sponsor people that tell me they're scared. And I said, so you're scared? And I said, no, I didn't say that. They tell me they're scared. I said, so you're full of fear? He says, I didn't say that. You know, I mean, I'm telling you. I mean, I wish I could have this stuff recorded. It happens. One day you'll be talking to some of your sponsors, and they'll tell you, and you can see they're scared. And you'll say, well, let's examine what the fear is all about. I said, I didn't say I'm in fear. So when you're dealing with somebody, and they're sober. So when you're dealing with somebody that's telling you they're scared, and you say, so you're scared, and then they deny they're scared, what are you going to do with that? I mean, you go back to Pluto, you know. That's the disease. We're lucky we show up at these meetings fully clothed, you know what I mean? So I had this problem, and that's the problem. I was worried about some case I was doing, and I was going to lose, and they were going to disbar me, and they'll all laugh at me because I got a lot of money, and what was going to happen? It was all sorts of bullshit. But I couldn't tell anybody, and you know why I couldn't tell anybody? Because nobody would understand. That's not why I couldn't tell anybody. Well, it was why I couldn't tell. It's why I told myself. I was convinced I couldn't tell somebody. Well, you know why I really couldn't tell anybody. Why couldn't I tell people?
Confidentiality.
Pride. I didn't want them to know that I was scared. Pride. But it sounds better to me. It sounds a lot better to say they wouldn't understand anyway. You don't even have to get to the pride thing. Just tell them they wouldn't understand, so it wouldn't help. You understand what I'm saying? But when the pain gets so great that after 6 months, you understand what I'm saying? You're going to drink or you're going to die. Then I went and I saw, I went to a retreat and I saw a Catholic, I went to a retreat. It was run by a guy named Father Al Grau. And Al Grau had like 35 years sobriety. He was a PhD in psychology, ran the Palm Beach Institute there. He was a former prisoner of war, one of the only survivors of the march, the death march from Manila, whatever it is, and what was it?
Batan.
The Bataan death march. I mean, this guy was like an icon in AA, you know what I mean? If Jesus is going to be, and he was a Jesuit priest. So I knew this guy, I knew this was the guy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I went in to see him. So now I got 9 years. I'm not a newcomer. And I walk in to see him and I say, I got a problem, you know, because you can sign up at the end of these things. And I proceed to tell him about this problem. I went to sleep thinking about this. I woke up thinking about this. You ever have a problem where you just can't stop thinking about it? You go to sleep thinking about this person. You wake up thinking about this person. You go to sleep thinking about this person. You cannot get rid of it. You know what I mean? And it's just killing you, you know? And you don't know what to do. And it's just killing you. And so I went in to talk to him. And I start telling him what the problem was I had. And he says to me, now imagine this. He says, he puts his hand up and he says, I don't want to hear this. He says, I'm not the guy to talk to about this. I said, no, I'm an alcoholic. You got to listen to me. You're the guy. He says, no, I'm really not the guy to listen to this. He says, no, you got to listen to me. You got to listen. So finally he said, okay, talk to me. So I told him the whole deal, you know, Catholic priest and everything. I'm not Catholic, you know, but I told him the whole deal. And he said, are you done? I said, yeah. I said, I'm done. He says, well, he says, you know what? I said, I know the answer. He says, what? He says, the answer is, excuse my language, this is what he says. He says, I think you're full of shit. No laughing? No, I wasn't laughing either when he said it. He said, I think you're full of shit. And then for 15 minutes, he explained to me in detail, why I was full of shit. And then after he explained to me in detail why I was full of shit, he did one of those Catholic priest things. He says, go with God, my son, or something like that. And I walked out of there livid. And I was prepared to call up the Pope and tell him there's some crazy Jesuit priest here. I bumped into people on the way and I said, don't see that guy. He's crazy. Here I am pouring out my heart and he's telling me I'm full of shit. I said, I'm not Catholic, but I think what they do is they say three Hail Marys and a banana, you know, and they go on. They don't tell you you're full of shit. Who says that? You know what I mean? I sat down in my bed, my little bed there in the monastery they had there, the little bed with a cross, and I start, you know, my mind is racing a million miles per hour. He said this, and I said that, and he said this, and I said that, and, you know, rape his mother, father, chicken, and whatever, you know. And all of a sudden, a thought whizzed across my mind. You know what I mean? And you know what the thought said? It said, maybe he's right. And the very next thought after maybe he's right was, he is right. And the thing that had been bothering me for 6 months went away like that. And my whole attitude towards my life, how I dealt with people, and my work completely changed, never to come back again. I approached my work and everything completely different with no fear. No fear. And the only thing he did was he said, you're full of shit. Yeah. And then told me exactly why I'm full of shit. And because actually he saved me the problem. I'd done four steps on it, but he saved me the problem. And the only reason he was able to do that, see, the truth will set you free. It'll set you free not only from the alcohol, it'll set you free from the worry. It'll set you free from the fear. It'll set you free from the fear of the boss or the fear of losing your job. Anything you think is a problem, it'll set you free. And the only reason he was able to do that is although I could not see the problem and put my finger on it, okay, because I had a story. It wasn't my fault, you know. He had done his fourth step. He was sober 35 years. He could see through me like a pane of glass. He was like an MRI. It's like going to an MRI, you know what I mean? He knew exactly what was bothering me. He knew why it was bothering me. He knew it was all about being self and self-centered and pride and ego. And he knew what. And not only did he know about it, because he knew himself, he knew exactly where to point the finger, where to touch the buttons, what to say it was, and communicate it to me. And of course, you know, being the true alcoholic, as soon as he said it, I wanted to throw it away and spit on it and burn it up. And, you know, as soon as the truth is, you know, that's what I wanted to do. But as soon as I started thinking, because I had enough AA training and I had done enough of this stuff so that as sick as I was, all of a sudden I thought after the rage came down, I said, maybe he's right. And then I accepted he was right. And my entire life changed. Now, is that worth taking the fourth step for? What do you think? You got stuff bothering you in your life? So that's what it's all about. So God bless you. Thank you very much.